Blog Talk Radio.
Loud music or some guy yelling obscenities in the background when you call.
unless the professor is truly awful, try to take classes from the more difficult professors for your major courses. They tend to make you work the hardest, and you'll end up knowing the material better. 3. Do laundry often. I know this sounds obvious, but when you find yourself without any clean undies, you will think of this advice and say, man, Nick was right. I bet he has on clean undies right now. 4. Make sure you get out and see new places. Be it through weekend trips with friends along the East Coast or studying abroad, now is the best time in our lives to get out and see the world. 5. Join a club, team, or extracurricular activity. You are never stagnant. You are either growing and maturing or falling behind. 6. Try to get internships. While difficult, going to a career fair and giving people your resume is good practice. And if you get the job, the experiences you gain will help you after college. 7. C-style indexing for an n-length array is 0 to n minus 1, whereas in MATLAB it is 1 to n. I don't know if that makes sense to you just yet. But if you're not careful, it'll get you eventually. 8. Try to sit up front in classes. Just like Frodo was a creature of Hobbit, Georgia Tech students are creatures of habit. Whatever seat you choose on the first day will likely be the seat you get all semester. Sit up in the first few rows and you'll be more likely to pay attention and have the professor remember you. 9. Get sleep. And one of the best ways to ensure that you can get sleep is to start working on homework right when it's assigned and start studying for tests a week before you take them. And lastly, 10, remember why you're here. To master a body of knowledge. So that's the best of my list so far. And I think that last one is most important. You see, the many reasons I chose Georgia Tech, one in particular stands out above the rest. I am going to build the Iron Man suit. That's right. As cute as my application essays were, green energy and world peace can wait. I want to fly around the world in an impenetrable suit of armor dating Gwyneth Paltrow. And really, I like to think that's why we're all here. See, for as long as I can remember, I've wanted to be an inventor. I still carry around a little notebook full of my ideas. And whether you're learning how to close a big business deal or design a major public policy decision, we chose Georgia Tech because we want to do the impossible. And this school is equipped with the resources and faculty to help us do just that. And so, in the words of Sir Isaac Newton, if I have seen further, it is by standing on the shoulders of giants. Georgia Tech is proud of its many traditions, but the one I find most exciting is our tradition of excellence. Our mission as students is not to follow in the footsteps of the astronauts, Nobel Prize laureates, and presidents who graduated before us, but to exceed their footsteps, crush the shoulders of the giants upon whom we stand. We here are all such innovative people, so I am telling you, if you want to change the world, you're at Georgia Tech. You can do that. If you want to build the Iron Man suit, you're at Georgia Tech. You can do that. If you want to play theme music during your convocation speech like a badass, we're at Georgia Tech. We can do that. I am doing that. your acceptance. And brace yourselves for a hell of a ride on your way to becoming a hell of an engineer.
Hey, that was the most fun speech I've heard from anybody in a long time. It brought me back to my years as an undergraduate, when I started school, and all the great tips. I mean, definitely do your laundry regularly. That's a big tip. If you're going into school now and you're just starting, if you're and try to sit in the front row of your classes. Whatever they may be. But, what's so funny is that we become so, jaded. Here we are. It's a beautiful, beautiful world. But I wanted to discuss tonight. I had so many other things to talk about. There are a couple of essays that I wrote recently that I wanted to talk about, and it kind of touches on these things, I guess, if you will. But maybe not. The first one I want to talk about is called Grateful for Being Here. Yeah. I wrote this yesterday, actually, and it's on my website. It's not very long, but, it talks about something important. I thought it was important to know. And maybe I really didn't know this until I read it in an article, and then I just put it on my website and hope that other people would know. But this article is called Grateful for Being Here. Only 2.7 billion people have access to the internet, according to Mark Zuckerberg, founder of Facebook, who wants to connect to the internet the rest of the 4 billion people in the underdeveloped regions of the planet. Well, I realized after reading that statement from a recent article from Yahoo News that I am extremely fortunate to have internet access and use it daily for my work and communications. I was aware that much of the world was without internet, but I hadn't realized that it was so much of the world population. Over 4 billion people cannot communicate as I do, nor do they have access to the technology and tools so many of us take for granted as used today. My life has become almost completely dependent upon electronic tools for my work, entertainment, communications, and survival. It is a true reality check to imagine our life without a technological advancements billions of us in the developed world take for granted. Simple necessities like water, electricity, public sanitation, public transportation, cars, safe housing, safe food, local, national, and international communications are virtually unavailable to two-thirds of the world's population. I am so grateful that I have the simple necessities and the few luxuries that most of the people in the developed countries take for granted. As I write this today, I am thinking of the billions of people who will not read it, but they have internet access, and almost 5 billion people who cannot read it because they do not have internet access. I am also considering, as I write, how absolutely fortunate I am that I can write and read and have the skill of typing. The thought of my good fortune compared with billions of other people greatly humbles me and makes me wonder how and why I am what I am and how I got here. But so many other people have far more than I do. Greater wealth, greater intelligence, greater opportunities, greater education, greater experience and wisdom, and far greater advantages than I will ever have. For example, Prince William and Kate and their new son Prince George of England have the greatest advantages the world has to offer. How can they rationalize their incredibly fortunate lives of unimaginable wealth and privilege? All they did was to be born into it. I guess everyone fortunate to be born in a developed country has issues to contend with, and expectations from families and cultures and societies to live our lives successfully and gratefully, and accept the advantages our parents, nations, and cultures provide. Those who are most successful in a developed world should be the most philanthropic and willing to share their knowledge, wealth, and vision for a better world, rather than being jealous of those who have more material advantages in their lives. We who have less should be thankful that we live in developed countries and are able to enjoy and benefit from the tools and opportunities made available to us by visionaries who have and are sharing their vision of global enlightenment with the world. So that's my thought, you know, about grateful for being here. And believe it or not, I really am. You know, I really am grateful for being here. And, you know, as I live and breathe and exist a little longer, you know, I'm so grateful for being alive and being able to still communicate with people and still being able to express myself and to this date. Because we can't always do that. We don't always know what the future will be. But, you know, for this moment in time, I'm communicating to someone. And that's a wonderful experience to me. And I'd like to read this next article that I wrote today, actually. It's called What Touches the Soul. The most heartfelt voices in song or speech touch the human soul. The sight of a magnificent mountain view or a vast ocean or the innocent beauty of a child or the love we feel for another person or they feel for us are the most real, most honest, and most beautiful and unspoken truths and emotions that touch the human soul to its deepest core. What words can bring us to tears or fill our minds with and hearts with hope, pride, and possibility? I have read works of great writers and heard great speakers speak the perfect words and singers sing the perfect notes. I felt my soul touched by the sound of divine truth. When someone can speak or write the words or sing the songs of his soul's humanity, or of his soul, humanity will listen. When a writer or artist reaches their level of brilliance, their work is immortalized. Must be spoken to in a way that overwhelms them. They can only listen and feel what is being said to them and react in deep thought, love, or hate and what has been said. Great revolutionary rhetoric, such as some of the great works of John Paine or Thomas Jefferson or Martin Luther King Jr., came from the heart and soul of the revolutionist. Imagine being so inspiring that a phrase we write or a speech we give could change the world and inspire nations into revolution. Only words and sentences crafted with the inspiration of universal truth are what can shatter all defenses of skepticism and cynicism and communicate truth, desire, and passion to a person, people, or nation, and ignite the fires of revolution. What remarkable vision they must have had that their words could set the world on fire. Moses was a great revolutionary who led his people out of Egypt. Washington led his revolutionary army to victory against the British and established the United States. What was the motivation behind these men, and what stoked their brilliance and courage to lead the world into their vision? There must be someone now who will inflame the world to enter their vision. A vision of peace and justice for all. The destruction of all greed and evil, suffering and poverty, and the enlightenment of every man, woman, and child with love, wisdom, and compassion. This must happen, and it must happen soon. And millions of men, women, and children throughout the world are fighting and dying for freedom and justice and their right to live without being oppressed or enslaved. It is now the time prophesied when mankind will be ruled by Christ. But Christ is not a man. Christ is every man, woman, and child. Christhood is what we must strive to achieve as individuals. And once this happens, we will have evolved into our highest selves, and our lives and our world will forever be at peace.
With that, sometimes I look forward to new places and new things, but I question their relevance. And I kind of like to stay within my own realm of understanding, and hope other people do too. But I wrote a very, very quick thing recently. It's called the F words, and I like to. It's kind of a poem that I'd like to read to you. It's called the F words. You can get these, by the way, by going to my website, lasteelshow.org. Feeling, falling, failing. Fate, frenzy, fading. Fan, fool, fanatic. Friend, foe, forgotten. Free, freed, freedom. Those are efforts. I did a series of photography, actually,
If you go to my website, it's called Road Rocks. I actually took pictures of road rocks, rocks that were on the road in front of me. And they're really inspiring. And if you're into digital photography, but you can take tons of photographs on a digital camera. And many of them turn out wonderful. You can do amazing things with them. And part of my website is a lot of art and photography, you know. But let me just read this one. Road rocks. Locked on, ignored, and over, and driven over, are masterpieces of nature. Beauty, strength, and endurance within a stone exterior. Yeah, and that's basically what this is. And pictures of rocks. And you know, it sounds a little bizarre, possibly, but you know, the fact that my site is seen by almost 1,500 people a day, and has been seen by over 147 countries. I guess I have something that people want to hear, you know. And I'm very, very grateful for that. But more so, I guess what I wanted to say was that it's okay, you know. I've done a mega series on a lot of photography and a unique photography on my site that I would ask you to go to and check it out, lastillshow.org. And one of the another recent poem that I did in a photograph that I took was called A Running Brook. It says, "A running brook continues its course in daylight, moonlight, and darkness. The cool water rushes over stones as they embed on roll or roll into the current. The brook sings the songs of the earth, songs of anger, passion, love, and compassion. Heaven, rain, or drought, or rather heavy rain or drought, affect its depth and speed as it moves onward through the forest to the sea." And that's something that I wrote, was inspired by. If you go to this, you'll see a number of fascinating pictures. I think you'll see a lot of really nice pictures. Last week I wrote an unusual very, very short story. And I don't know why exactly I was inspired by this, but I thought about it. And it seems to work. I'd like to read this to you. It's called The Pit Bull and the Worm, a very short story. A pit bull was walking around his backyard one day when it noticed a worm slowly moving in the grass. He put his nose against it and smelled it, then looked at it curiously and tasted it. Its skin was slimy and tasted like dirt. He thought it was a curious animal as it moved quickly into the tall grass and down a wormhole. The pit bull dug at the hole to unearth the worm, but he couldn't find it and sniffed around the area for it. Then he growled in frustration, and he realized he couldn't eat or play or be friends with the worm. Then decided he would ignore them for the rest of his life.
And that, you know, kind of sums it up. I don't know if you got the metaphor or not, but, you know, hey, that's the way it is, you know. Yeah, that's just the way it is. I haven't done a Thursday Night Show for a little while, and I wanted to read some of the stuff that I did, and, you know, and you can always go back to it on my website, lastillshow.org. But back at the beginning of this month, toward the first week of this month, on August 8th, I wrote an article based on Obama versus Putin. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting when you become like the head of state of a country. You know, you're no longer like Barack Obama, blah blah blah. You're Obama, and you're not like Vladimir Putin. You're like Putin, you know. So it's like this one says Obama versus Putin. That's basically what it is, you know. It's like a boxing match, you know. It's like everybody, you know, it's, you know, Muhammad Ali, right? You know, versus Frazier. Ali versus Frazier. That's what it comes down to. But and this particular one, I wrote on the 8th of August, and it says Obama versus Putin. I have to laugh at the recent breakdown in Russian-U.S. relations. I realize laughing at the two world leaders' dispute may not be understood by serious politophiles who take foreign policy and international diplomacy seriously. Well, Putin has disliked Obama since Obama was first elected president. I praised Putin's alliance with Iran, and again I praised Russia's alliance with Syria. And Putin must be laughing hysterically at the U.S. failed involvement in Afghanistan and Iraq. He knows that G.W. Bush and Obama are considered to be criminals and idiots with near zero approval ratings by Americans and by every country in the world. Putin's agreement to grant Snowden's political approval or asylum was the best Obama put down he could have done without engaging in war. Putin made a firm statement to all countries who fear Obama's threats. He made Obama look like a wimp and an international fool. No one believes Obama. No one likes him. And he may be impeached before his term in office officially ends. As an American citizen, I personally apologize to the world. I speak only for myself when I say I am sorry that I voted for Barack Obama. And I am ashamed that Obama has made such a horrible leader. My judgment in the 2010 election must have been impaired. However, the choice between Obama and Romney was not difficult to make. With all of Obama's faults, Romney was even worse. American presidential elections are a farce. I have known this for many years. But as a brainwashed American who believes this country must endure, I felt compelled to vote for a bad or worse candidate. I no longer feel that way. I would sooner expatriate and vote for another corporate New World Order troll, which is exactly what Obama and Romney are. Obama's obvious genocidal policies toward the Middle East and other countries around the world have destroyed any faith I ever had in this fraud of a Nobel Prize winner. Investigative reports state as many as 72 countries have a U.S. military presence, and many of these countries are in major conflicts with the U.S. Russia is the only country that is willing to defend and ally with these countries who are threatened by the United States. Obama
is trying to heat up the Cold War. He'll do everything he can to distract the American media and people away from his growing scandals. Putin's put down of Obama by granting asylum to Snowden's checkmated Obama and made Obama look weak and ridiculous in the eyes of the world.
That's true, folks. I mean, that's very true. I just can't accept being anymore. Hey. And at this point in time, I don't know if I touched on this last week or not. I don't think I did this program last week. But I wanted to focus on a poem that I wrote on August 7th. It's called A Tall Ship in a Storm. And there's this amazing photograph that I got from an old stock photo circa 1885 that I was able to enhance and amazing results with the enhancement of saturation of color and light and so on and so forth. And it came out to this incredible picture, and I really, really was amazed. And it's called, I labeled it A Tall Ship in a Storm. And I was able to write a short poem to go with it. And let me read that to you now. As a tall ship in a storm, America braces for a revolution. Our captain is a madman. The harsh winds of oppression rock the tall ship on the violent sea. Before the ship capsizes, we must seize the helm and ride out the storm. Our sails may be torn, but our masts are not broken. And that's how we are today, folks. That's how America is. We're in a storm, you know. We're in a major storm, and you know, one that I don't think we can. We may not survive from. I'd like to believe we can. There are two things that I want to write. I'd like to... I may have read this before, and I think I have, but I want to read it again because it means a lot to me personally as a quote by Mahatma Gandhi. But Mahatma Gandhi was a tremendous inspiration to millions and billions and billions, I should say, billions of people around the world. And he said, Mahatma Gandhi said, you must be the change you wish to see in the world. I've thought about that statement for many years, whenever I insist on political and social changes. I try to live in the spirit that substantiates and mirrors the changes I am seeking in the world. I continue to write and voice my opinions to try to influence others to see what I see and feel the need to take action to fight the wrongs of society. In the past 6 months, I have noticed a trend of unprecedented worldwide revolutionary thought and behavior that seems to be all-pervasive and spreading rapidly throughout the world. This website and my radio show have been visited by hundreds of thousands of readers and listeners from over 90 countries in the last 8 years. And I want to correct that because it's not true. It's 147 countries in the last 8 years. And recently, I've noticed a consistent and significant increase in visitors and listeners, which seem to be corresponding with the growth of rebellion around the world. I am noticing many more bold voices
listening to alternative news on radio, television, and websites, few Americans believe anything Obama says, and even fewer agree with anything our Congress is doing. Recent polls have shown near zero support by Americans for their own government, and the majority poll desire a clean sweep of our entire system. Those in government now fear and are preparing for a revolution. These are dangerous and revolutionary times we are all living in. The reality of corruption, deceit, and despair is so obvious to the world masses that it no longer can be disguised by deceptive media or government propaganda. The frightening faces of those trying to control the minds and souls of everyone in the world are now unmasked and exposed for who and what they are. The danger of global domination by an elitist group of billionaires is apparent to all us all by their generosity in providing millions of free, lethal vaccinations to inoculate third world countries and populations, rather. We are all seeing and are horrified by the murderous reality of government-sponsored genocide, by the manipulation of the world food and water supply, through the creation of artificial climate changes, global depression economics, and war and military occupations, and draconian police brutality used against protesters and peaceful citizens. These are all weapons of mass destruction used for massive global population reduction. These horrific actions are causing people around the world planet to merge into one common consciousness and awareness because of their fear and their need for self-preservation. The universal consciousness prophesied in indigenous prophecies and by the greatest seers and prophets throughout history is beginning to take effect on humanity. Understanding each other now is the only hope for our survival. By reaching out to others and teaching others about what we see and feel and understand, and supporting others in their fight for justice and for life, will create the great change the world needs. We must support one another by caring about each other. It's the only way we can achieve universal justice and enlightenment and ascend into universal consciousness. Once we become the change we wish to see in the world, the promise of world enlightenment will be fulfilled. Ah, if only that could be true. I believe it can be. You know, I just believe it can be. Yeah. I'm going to play a music video now. It's called A Better Place. It's really kind of fun. It's a nice little video, but it's on YouTube. It's called A Better Place. And I believe that musicians are the frontline soldiers of the world-changing revolution now in progress. Artists, writers, and all other activists are the second lines of the worldwide revolutionary attack against the enemies of humanity. Support all musicians. People around the world must hear the music of revolution before they can see the vision or read the words. Let me play this for you. The song brings together musicians from around the world to speak out against inequality and social justice. No matter who you are, what religion, race, caste, or gender, no matter where you live, each one of us has the right to live in freedom, dignity, and peace.
Make Let's go sailing.
Look forward to talking to you next week. Good night, everyone.